Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. This is episode 282, and I am your host, as always, Sean Hayes. A bit of a light news week this week. I had a really hard time trying to dig up some particularly interesting news. It just seems like we got through a lot of the big announcement season. So we're kind of in that like post what would be E3 kind of lull, a little bit, for gaming news in particular. Did manage to find some stuff. There's a little bit of also D&D news thrown in there a little bit. Especially if you're patrons and, you know, you find any like board game tabletop news, or any video game news that you are particularly interested in, you can throw that out. Send me a message. Send me a message on Patreon. Put it as a comment on an episode. Throw it in the Discord. I'll take a look at it and we'll see if it's worth looking at. See if it's corroborated by major news outlets and throw it onto the docket. Hope everyone's doing well. Personal news. I was diagnosed with sort of an autoimmune, autoinflammatory disorder, known as, we'll shorten it to AS. It's a very long, complicated name. Basically I've had symptoms for, you know, like close to 20 years now, but it's a combination of things, finally led to the diagnosis. Shouldn't necessarily mean anything for the podcast. Although just if there's times where I might be having a bad week, just health wise, may not be able to keep up with it. Previous times in the past when I've needed to skip a week or two, for the podcast, likely that is happening. It's not like this is necessarily a new thing. It's just, it has a name to it. But it also means that I can actually get treatment for it. So, hopefully, that will lead to, getting treated will lead to just not having symptoms as often. Ultimately just, you know, in the spirit of being open, with the audience here. I don't expect it to really impact a lot of, the release schedule. Unless of course, you know, I'm having a flare up, cause it is painful. It is debilitating. It just, you know, might have an impact there, but, fingers crossed, podcast is not exactly a very physically intensive thing. So that at least is a point in its favor. Like I said, bit of a light news week, but, we're going to do our best. But this means that I can go into a little bit more in depth for each news item, to get us through. So instead of dragging it out even further, why don't we get right into today's topics? So first up, IGN reports that the latest installment of Square Enix's flagship series, Final Fantasy, has sold over 3 million copies during its first week. I was not aware that this game was going to be out so soon. It seems like they just announced it. Final Fantasy 16, it is out. These are numbers. It is a PlayStation 5 exclusive. 3 million copies on PS5. Pretty good. Those are pretty good numbers. Excuse me. This game seems to be using the same engine as the Final Fantasy VII Remake. So it doesn't pull you into a, you know, separate battle screen, more of an action, you know, action RPG style game. Like you're not doing turn-based combat, or even like a real-time battle system, like the original Final Fantasy VII, or was it an action time battle system or something? You know, but very similar to the Final Fantasy VII remake. So if you're familiar with that, sort of the same engine, it looks like. And really seems to revolve around summons, like even more so than previous titles. I've watched a little bit of gameplay here and there, but not too much. My hope is that maybe this will follow suit and come to Steam later on. You know, I would certainly be interested in taking a look at it. But yeah, 3 million copies in its first week. Pretty, that's what we in the business call a pretty good launch. No, I mean that's a phenomenal launch. So yeah, and especially as a console exclusive, is particularly impressive. So yeah, big week for Square Enix and for Sony. Next up, The Verge reports that according to internal emails from the FTC versus Microsoft hearing, Microsoft, so there's like an internal email from, oh geez, I am Phil Spencer. I was like, I'm blanking on his name. This can't happen right now. Like, from Phil Spencer, you know, head of sort of the Xbox division of Microsoft. Basically to like the strategy committee or something, putting forth a plan like to buy studios like Sega and Bungie. Or I guess like get Bungie back. Basically to help bolster Game Pass subscriptions. Particularly Sega, thinking that like everybody, you know, to paraphrase the email, was like, Sega's a super popular developer. They make franchises that everybody loves. It'd be great to get them in-house, get it on Game Pass, and people will flock to Game Pass and get more subscriptions. So yeah, this was as part of it. So I don't know what phase that's in, but like this was part of the stuff submitted. So this would be, you know, something that wouldn't necessarily work in Microsoft's favor, because some of the language used was like to really like hammer out the competition and things like that, but not painting Microsoft in a good light. That said, I think this is wild. I think Microsoft buying Sega, I don't see it happening. And like basically, like there was mention of this stuff in emails, and then seemingly nothing has moved forward on it. So I don't know if the strategy committee was like, this is outlandish, we're not going to do this, or if it was presented to, say, Sega and Sega laughed because, you know, a Western company buying a Japanese developer. I don't know if it would ever happen in my lifetime, let's put it that way. I would be shocked if it did. Well, especially ones that are like as entrenched as like Sega. I don't see it happening. So my guess is, you know, there were also some articles about like as Xbox is basically lost the console war. they are well behind Sony and they are well behind Nintendo in terms of current gen. It seems like they're looking to try and utilize Game Pass as the thing that sort of bridges that gap, and trying to just get as many things as possible on it, in an effort to get people to sign up for Game Pass. Like that, it seems like they want to throw all their eggs into Game Pass as the strategy. I don't know. You know, I also think it's also part of this struggle that I don't understand and don't agree with, where it is no longer enough to just be profitable. You have to be more profitable than you were the last quarter, or you're a failure. That just seems a little unhealthy to me, but, you know, that's the age that we live in. Next up, IGN reports, talking about the next sort of big publisher, one of the big three, reports that Nintendo plans on, quote, a smooth transition from the Switch to whatever its successor is going to be, by continuing to use the Nintendo account system. I mean, this is pretty much like basically non-news, because it feels like common. Like, of course you would. Like, the only reason why this is because it's Nintendo, where anybody else would be like, well, of course, we're going to, like, we have an account system, we're just going to use it, and we're going to we're going to port that over to the next console. Now, does this mean that, like, Nintendo Switch Online would then get converted over to whatever the next console is going to be? I don't know. My hope is yes, because the hope is that, because it's running, because essentially emulating, that they would just have to adapt whatever stuff that is specific to the Switch would just have to be updated for the next console. But then again, that may just be sort of a client side thing, and, you know, it would just like all the emulation stuff would still be done. Like, that would just be able to be ported over. And it's just sort of the end client that you would have to update for a new console. And, you know, if, again, there's been no talk, right, of a successor, just, you know, someday there will be one. You know, my hope is, if they go the backwards compatibility route, that this, you know, continuing with the system means that you also keep your purchases. But yeah, again, seems like a no-brainer, common sense. Of course, you have a system that works. You would just keep continuing to use it. But, I mean, I think it's also the My Nintendo account stuff has been around for a while now. So, like, this is also, again, like I think that started in the Wii era. And you're, like, technically, your account did carry over through, like, Wii, Wii U, and Switch. And 3DS and stuff like that. It's just, it wasn't like fully integrated the way it is now. So my hope is that it keeps that full integration, and they sort of port over existing features within reason. You know, I understand when Nintendo likes to do wacky things with their consoles. So if they do something where the successor either has features that the Switch doesn't, or it loses features, obviously there's going to be some sort of give and take, of things that you need to update. So, but yeah, so good to know that we don't have to make all new accounts in theory, for whatever the next system is going to be. So next up, this is sort of a tangential Dungeons and Dragons news. So this is a book that is part of the Dungeons & Dragons brand, Practically Complete Guide to Dragons. So this is a soon-to-be-released companion book, kind of announced sort of out of the blue, and taking a page out of Nintendo's book of being like, and it comes out next week. But this is a sort of illustrated fantasy field guide that features all sorts of lore and illustrations surrounding dragons. It's like an update to the 2006 Practical Guide to Dragons, which was like a Dragonlance companion book. To be clear, this is not a player's guide, DM's guide, or anything. Like, this is not a game book for Dungeons and Dragons. This is sort of in the vein of, if you were to just go to, you know, the bookstore and just pick up a book on dragons, that just happened to be branded, you know, with some existing property, you know. It would essentially be if, you know, there was like the Field Guide to Hobbits. But D&D is kind of pushing it as if it's a way to like help game masters and players like you get a little bit more of lore on dragons and their biologies and you know, field guide stuff. Ironically, things that used to be included along with game material for, you know, whatever the dragon book was, you know, in some editions it was the Draconomicon. Or what should have been in Fizbin's Guide to Dragons. I can't remember what it was called in 4th edition. Maybe Draconomicon like 1 and 2 in 4th edition. But this is basically, you know, just if you like dragons and you want to sort of read up on the lore and mythos of dragons in, let's face it, Forgotten Realms, you know, this would be a book for that. You know, because I don't know if they're going to go into how dragons work on different worlds. And my guess would be it's going to be a very Faerun-centric book, because that's sort of the quote-unquote default setting for Dungeons & Dragons currently. Just wanted to put that out there, because I know there's probably people who listen to this podcast big into D&D, you know, I may have heard about this and are thinking like, oh, wait, like, don't we have Fizbins? Like, what's going on with this? Not a game book, just sort of a light reading sort of field guide type thing. So if you're just interested in like game material, you can skip it. Like, it's not, like, it's also not like a, I don't know, it's hard to describe. Like, it's just a weird thing for it to be, because it's also getting released on D&D Beyond, which is a little weird, because, like, it won't have any interaction with, like, character sheets or anything like that, so. Next up, Project Loki. Polygon reports that Theorycraft Games has announced, it's like an upcoming sort of like MOBA sort of shooter, like top down shooter, squad based game that features gameplay elements that are reminiscent of Apex, Fortnite, Enter the Gungeon. There's a little bit of like MOBA DNA in there. So like League, Heroes of the Storm, Dota. Smite, stuff like that. But it is top down, so it is sort of more, like, unlike Smite, which is sort of that sort of behind the third person view, more of the field of view is more akin to like MOBAs and sort of Diablo style games. Playtesters have said that the game feels like, quote, Apex meets League of Legends meets Smash Brothers, end quote. Saw a little bit of art style, very reminiscent of Fortnite. I don't know if that's just, like, I've seen a lot of games that kind of have a similar art style to Fortnite that have come out, like, since Fortnite. And I don't know if there's just, like, some sort of asset pack in whatever engine they're using, or if it's like specifically done that way to capitalize on Fortnite's success, you know, or if it's people who are just sort of subconsciously being influenced by that art style for their game. So the big thing about this game is, like, it's not sort of a point and click to move like MOBAs are. Like, you're controlling the character a little more directly, and there's no, like, it's intended that you stay with your group, so you're not breaking up to go do lanes, like you are in a MOBA. So it's very much like objective, sort of scouting based. And there's like a lot of environmental effects in the maps. But like, you know, you start off there, it seems to be sort of a battle bus and that you drop down on the map from, and then like you're going through these sort of winding paths. A lot of the targeting and movement mechanics seem to feel very MOBA-ish, aside from, again, like it feels like you're moving your character, you know, either with WASD keys or a joystick, as opposed to like pointing and clicking on places on the map. So yeah, Theorycraft Games, made up by a bunch of former Bungie, Riot, and potentially like Blizzard developers. This is not, I don't believe this is like one of Mike Morhaime's studios. And it's also not affiliated with Warchief or Second Dinner. So like this would be like another studio. But yeah. So yeah, Polygon also, they did an interview with the lead developer or president of Theorycraft. I don't know. I don't know if he's just the lead dev on the game. He used to be in charge of League of Legends. Not Ghostcrawler, but so yeah, they have along with this article, they have an interview up to kind of talk about the game and show some gameplay and everything. Next up, Sony Games Radar reports that a redaction error in some court documents submitted by Sony in the FTC versus Microsoft case. They didn't redact some things that probably should have gotten redacted, and so accidentally revealed development timelines and development costs for and like team sizes for Horizon Forbidden West and The Last of Us Part II. Basic gist, each game cost over $200 million to develop. Horizon Forbidden West was around 216, and Last of Us Part II was 220 million, respectively. Dev teams, Horizon Forbidden West had a like 300-person dev team. Last of Us Part II had a 200-person dev team. And both were in the 60 to 70 month range for development time. So quite a long period of time. But I remember, and I don't know who said it, but for bigger, especially big budget and AAA video games, waiting 5 years or potentially even longer than 5 years, should be considered the norm. And, you know, I kind of have to agree with that, you know. And, of course, you know, for Nintendo fans, like, with how long they waited for Tears of the Kingdom, like, of course. Or Ocarina of Time. I'm just going to throw that out there. Like, I'm old enough to remember that game was delayed so many times. And, you know, for good reason. Ended up being great. Glad they pushed it back. But it was delayed for what felt like an eternity. Yeah, just one of those things. And just an interesting little note, of like a gaffe of, tidbits of information that can come out when things aren't properly redacted. But yeah, these are huge budgets. You know, and this is just development costs. This is not marketing or promotional costs either, which could be as much as like double, triple, however much more. You figure, you know, if you're doing commercial, like if you're doing TV commercials, programmatic ad campaigns, display advertising, you know, if you're doing stream promotions, if you're doing events to showcase it, you know, if you're showing it off for, you know, things like, you know, what would have been E3, or, you know, like Sony Showcase and things like that. Yeah, huge, huge marketing budgets as well. So, yeah, AAA games, absolute monoliths in terms of how much those projects can cost. So yeah, and I mean, like, those are two great games. You know, I haven't played them, but based on gameplay, and playing similar games, you know, like, they're both really good. And, you know, unfortunately, there are AAA games that have those kinds of budgets that don't end up great. and there's plenty of smaller games, you know, indie games that have budgets that are nowhere near that size that are just as enjoyable. So it's just one of those things where, you know, you kind of see a little bit of how the sausage is made behind the curtain. And just of how much money gets thrown at some of these things, and how many people get thrown at some of these things. You know, I would be interested to see, you know, a little bit, you know, obviously this information was not supposed to be public. but one of the things that I would love to see is, you know, that is common practice and, like, and is public knowledge, is what are the work conditions like when working on a game? You know, how much crunch is being done? Are people being required to do crunch? What is, like, a normal work schedule? How much flexibility do people have? What sort of benefits are being offered? You know, I think more transparency for that would be good for the industry. Because as it still stands right now, industry is pretty predatory. It still kind of relies on people underselling their talent, and overworking people because people want to work on video games. It's still hot demand. So, they're willing to work more for less. We're kind of reaching a point where that's not sustainable because it's burning people out. So, all right. Bit of odd news. Game Informer reports that there will be special Mario embossed Oreo cookies that will be available for a limited time starting July 10th. So Oreo does this a couple times, you know, they'll do of various, like, movie promotions and things like that. So no special flavors. It will just be, like, on the Oreo instead of being stamped with, like, Oreo. It'll have, like, Yoshi or Fire Flowers, Mushrooms, Mario, Peach, Toad, Luigi. Just characters sort of embossed on the cookie itself. But unfortunately, you're not going to get a truffle-flavored Oreo cookie for Super Mario or anything like that. I don't know what you would do for Mario. They'd probably do just some sort of, like, birthday cake thing and just make it, like, red and white or something like that. But yeah, so just limited time promotion. I don't know if it's going to be sold in specific locations or not, but... yeah, you know, for all the Oreo cookie fans out there who are also Super Mario fans. There you go. And then finally, our last bit of news. Next Dungeons & Dragons playtest for, I mean, they called it 1D&D. Now they're not calling it 1D&D anymore. But basically for the next iteration, will be released on June 29th. So if you're watching live, that's tomorrow. If you're listening, that is potentially today. Points of interest will include class progression for the monk. So it'll have a class write-up for the monk. Capstones, class capstones returning to level 20 instead of getting an epic feat. Don't know how I feel about that. Subclass progression reverting to a class-by-class basis, but all subclasses will start at level 3. Kind of bummed that it's like I did like the fact that subclass progression was standard across all the classes. But like, I don't know, like there was a video talking about feedback, but there was never really any feedback taught. Like there was never really any feedback asked about subclasses specifically. So I don't know if they're just pulling, like if this is just another, like we're just going to try something, especially since like that change had made it through several rounds of playtesting. You know, I'm kind of hoping that they go back to a structured, like standardized subclass progression. But we'll see. Just because it made it easier to kind of like weigh different features against each other when comparing them. So, and to make it easier to design new classes, because then you had a structure that it had to fit. Or if you were going to do modifications or updates to existing classes, like it gave you a structure that you could work with. And then now it's going to go back to sort of loosey-goosey of like, oh, well, you know, like, I don't know if some classes are just going to get more features or less features. But so we'll see. I will, you know, next week's podcast might include, it might be a deep dive on the playtest. Might not. We'll find out, and we'll find out what other sort of news topics there are. But that is going to wrap things up for today's episode, for this week's episode. So thank you all for joining me for episode 282 of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast for the wrap-up of this week's gaming news. If you'd like to see more 8-Bit Adventures content, the best way to do that is to head over to the website. Post that in the chat here at 8bitadventures.com. If you'd like to help support that content, again, best way to do that, become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. There's only one Patreon for the whole thing. So podcast, comic, all the others, you know, streams, all the other stuff. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month, and that gives you access to all sorts of patron benefits. You know, is a better deal than throwing money elsewhere. Although if you do that too, or in place of, that's also appreciated. But yeah, you know, there's benefits, plenty of benefits for being a patron, and it's a little bit less of an investment. And it's just a one monthly rate. Big thank you to all my current patrons. Thank you for your continued support. And let's see if we can get some more friendos, more patrons. So yeah, our opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. That song has been our opening theme for 282 episodes now. So, 'cause it's a banger, folks. And he does great work. So go check him out. And that wraps up our show. So thank you all for joining me. And as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.